set out to the Hall and Capitas fan hotline, where we find the great Al Oliver, longtime Pirate, great hitter, smooth swing. They called him Scoop. We had a nice conversation yesterday, and I think that Al Oliver drove in the very first run at Three River Stadium, which is the occasion of our phone call today, July 16th, 1970. So we're coming up on the 50th anniversary of the opening of Three River Stadium. Pirates 3, Reds 2. Al Oliver, how are you today, sir?
Hey, Joe, I'm doing fine. Yourself?
Doing very well. I appreciate you taking the time. When we spoke yesterday, I loved it because I asked you what you remembered about either that day or just moving into Three River Stadium, and you told me it was the carpeting in the clubhouse and the air conditioning. Can you talk about that a little bit? I guess you didn't have those things at Forbes Field.
No, we didn't. And plus, we had very close quarters, too, and with no air condition and small lockers. But once we moved into Three River Stadium, that was probably one of the first things that I saw was carpet, you know, not worrying about sliding, you know, with your spikes on and falling. And then the air condition was really nice. It was like being at home. And that was the first thing that I thought about. And also, you were thinking also who would be your locker partner, who would be next to you. And all that worked out well. And, you know, we knew that we came into Three River Stadium with a outstanding ball club, too. And that made all the difference in the world. We knew that that first game in Three Rivers that we would have a good crowd because they wanted to see the ballpark just as well as we did. And I've always been one that I never really got too excited about too many things, but I really enjoyed the fact that we were going to a new ballpark and catching up with the times. Although I really enjoyed Ford Field, it was more fan-friendly, and that's always been very important to me.
Who did you locker next to at Three Rivers?
Gene Alley.
Gene Alley. Okay.
Yeah, Gene was next to me, and, you know, he was getting close to the end of his career. And I know he had some down moments and because he couldn't be the player that he used to be. And I always talked to him all the time about keeping his confidence up and the career that he had already had. And, you know, sometimes careers do come to an end, and sometimes it's difficult for players to let go of that.
Talking to Al Oliver here on the Hall and Capitas fan hotline. I'm looking at your career numbers right now, Al. I don't know how many guys have batted 303 or better for an entire career, but you did. And I'm convinced that people absolutely don't remember that you went to Texas and then to Montreal. And in Montreal in 1982, you had a hell of a year. You had 204 hits, 22 home runs, 109 RBIs, and you hit 331, and you were third in the MVP vote that year. You got better with age, like a fine wine.
It's ironic that you said that because someone had mentioned that to me last week. They were looking at my baseball card, and they said, well, this guy was going upward rather than downward.
And yes.
The reason for that was my conditioning level. You know, I was always in great shape, and I know I had at least three or four more good years left, but once I left Montreal, they began to platoon me, and that's something that I never could understand because you win a batting title one year, and then you come back the next year, and you play in 157 games, which is no sign of slowing up. But I stayed in shape. Racquetball kept me going, and I took a lot of pride in my conditioning, and then all of a sudden, you know, I was platooned, and the next thing I know, that I was out of the game.
I didn't remember in that first game, July 16th of 70, or I didn't know, I should say, that Bill Mazeroski was the starting second baseman. What was it like to play with Maz?
Easy. you know, coming up as a first baseman, which I did, that made things a lot easier for me. Although at that time, you know, I was known as a good defensive first baseman. And it was one thing about playing next to Maz. I knew that to my right, there were not going to be too many balls that was going to be hit in the right field with Maz there. I don't think I ever saw Maz miss a ball. And his double play combination with his quick hands were always amazing to me. I know he worked with Dave Cash for a while on the quick hands. And it was just amazing to play with Maz. And I'm glad I had the chance to play with Bill, because the thing I liked about him, he was very quiet. He really didn't say much, but he just did his job. And eventually, you know, he went into the Hall of Fame, in which, you know, he was deserving. And I'm just glad that I had a chance to play right next to Maz. Great player.
Talking to Al Oliver, the great Al Oliver, 303 career hitter. I'm curious, Al, you hit cleanup, at least on this day, I'm sure in many other games, between Clemente and Stargell. You were quite the hitter in your own right. Did you ever feel overshadowed on those teams?
Never. Never. I never felt overshadowed, because from a hitting standpoint, I always knew that I could hit with anyone. That was God's gift to me. And I was always of the belief that when God gives you a gift, a natural gift, only He can take it away. I never felt intimidated by playing with those guys and playing in the center of those guys, in the outfield. I just felt that I was one of the young, upcoming players, and I was just glad that I had the opportunity to have played between those two guys and with those guys. And I didn't realize that I hit four. So that's something that I got to put in my mindset, that that was the respect that they had. And plus the fact that they put me in a position where I would get good pitches to hit.
Yeah, that's not a bad spot to be, right between Clemente and Stargell.
That's for sure.
So let me ask you, with those two guys, I just simply say the name. We'll start with Clemente, Roberto Clemente. What immediately pops into your mind?
Greatness. For real. Not too many people you meet that are for real and honest. A lot of guys say a lot of things but don't mean it. And that was the thing that he did. He was a humanitarian. He loved people. He always said that in this world, there's no excuse for anybody, with all these millionaires and billionaires that we have in the world, that anybody should go hungry or thirsty. And, you know, as we all know now, it kind of, I guess, summed him up, the way that he left here. He was helping someone, but he always believed and loved people. And that's what he always wanted. He didn't necessarily get it when he first came up. They misunderstood him, which was very unfortunate. But after about 5-6 years, I think people begin to realize how great of a human being he was. And his greatness as a player was always there. And Stargell, I can't say enough for him. Stargell was a one-on-one guy. He was excellent one-on-one with his players. You know, he could pull a player aside and talk to him and be very diplomatic about it. So Stargell was a leader. He was our first lieutenant. Roberto, of course, was our leader. And Roberto led by example. And Stargell took care of the rest as far as players one-on-one. Roberto would never say anything to a player that he didn't mean. And when he did say something to you, you could take it to the bank.
Al Oliver on the Hall and Capitas fan hotline. Fascinating figure is the guy who started that day for you, is Doc Ellis. And we spoke yesterday, Al, that you said Doc Ellis was your best friend in baseball. And for me, I've always been fascinated with the guy. And I know he went through some very rough times, some good times, and at the end of his life, toward the end of his life, really seemed to have it together in terms of helping other people, notably addicts, substance abuse. And you said that that became clear how he touched people when you went to speak at his funeral. I'm wondering if you can sum up your relationship with Doc Ellis.
I met Doc in 1965 at Daytona Beach, Florida, when we had our minor league spring training. Matter of fact, he was the first one that I met when I checked in. And we seemed to have hit it off right off the bat. And one thing about Doc did things throughout his career that to us was comical, the hair rollers and saying that his bed was too small, and that made headlines, and getting maced in Cincinnati because he didn't have his ticket to prove that he was a ball player with the Pirates to get into the Reds clubhouse. And it was things like that, thrown at the Reds hitters, like four or five hitters in a row. But Doc always had a purpose for doing things. And his purpose basically was to keep us as a team loose. And he did a great job of that. He was our clubhouse lawyer. I don't think that we would have won without Doc because he kept us laughing all the time. And as you had mentioned, toward the end of his career, you know, as far as drug problems and addictions and things of that nature, these are things that Doc had went through, especially being from Los Angeles and the Watts area. He helped so many people. And I was glad to see him leave here that way on a very positive note. And I think one of the biggest thrills, and usually it's not a thrill, but it's a celebration, when his wife had called me and told me that Doc had told her a year before he passed that if something would ever happen to him, get Scoop to eulogize me because he's the only one that would say what needs to be said in the manner in which it should be said. So I flew to Los Angeles and eulogized him, and I felt good about it. It was an honor for me to eulogize my best friend, and I felt good about it. And that's all I can say. I would wish that more people would have got the opportunity to have really known Doc Ellis, because he was a great human being. His heart was as big as the Pacific Ocean. He would do anything for you. And I was just very fortunate to have played with some great people. And it's not too often that a player can say that he played with a lot of good people throughout his baseball career.
Lastly, Al, you mentioned, and we got about a minute left, that at that funeral service, a bunch of people either came up and talked to you, or you became aware that there were a lot of people who said that Doc had actually maybe saved their lives. Is that right?
That is correct. There are approximately 20 people that was there, approximately, and they all were sitting together. And me not realizing who they were, because I really didn't know them, but about five or six of those guys came up and told me that Doc saved my life. And that's the reason why I'm here today, for what he has done for me. If he had not done the things for me, it's no telling that it could be me lying up there in that casket.
Al, I appreciate you taking the time today, and I hope we can speak again soon. Thank you.
Okay, Joe, you take care.